Lecture 15. Shakespeare, Othello, The Moor of Venice.
In our last lecture, we explored the Divine Comedy of Dante. It is a work of profound philosophical and religious meaning. It is a commedia, because life is ultimately a comedy, in that it can end in salvation and eternal bliss. And that is the goal of Dante, to lead you to the wisdom that recognizes the love of God, that moves the entire universe, and yet at the same time can care for each one of us individually. Dante joins a very select company. In the literature of Greece, there are many great writers, but Homer, for the Greeks, was always the outstanding genius, and against him all others were compared. And for the Romans, it was Virgil. Dante chose Virgil as his guide. Such was the grandeur of Virgil's poetry. For the Germans, it is Goethe, and Goethe's Faust will be the subject of two of our lectures. And for the English-speaking world, it is William Shakespeare. He is our Dante, he is our Goethe, he is our Homer and our Virgil. He is a master of writing tragedy, a master of comedy, a master of historical plays. A genius so prolific that a great deal of nonsense has been written trying to prove he didn't compose his own plays. No, Shakespeare is a genius. And we turn now to the study of one of his great tragedies, The Othello, produced in 1604. And we ask it the same question. How do we live our lives? Must we be in search forever of God and of a meaning to our life, and are there consequences for our actions? For Shakespeare was deeply concerned with human nature. He lived in an age of great religious fervor and in an age of grandeur. His was the age of Queen Elizabeth and the age of the Renaissance in England, an age in which England itself was expanding across the globe, the age in which the New World was beginning to be settled by English men and women. It was an age of heroic events, such as 1588, when under the leadership of Queen Elizabeth, the mighty armada from Spain was destroyed off the coast of England, and England would grow to be free and Protestant. It was an age which in 1536 could put William Tyndale to death. He was burned at the stake for the crime of publishing a translation of the Bible. And it was an age after Shakespeare which would see Parliament execute a king, a legitimate, God-given king, King Charles, for wanting to be a Catholic. It was an age in which men and women went to their deaths because of their belief, not just in God and in Jesus, but in a Protestant form of Christianity or Catholic form of Christianity. In 1517, a single monk, Martin Luther, because he believed he was justified by God through the Bible, sought to bring down the entire establishment of the Catholic Church. It was an age of great wars of religion and of mighty men upon the throne and women like Elizabeth or like Ivan the Terrible of Russia, Suleiman the Magnificent of the Ottoman Empire. So a great and heroic age was the age in which Shakespeare lived. And yet, his plays have little of a religious fervor in them. In fact, events happen as though God doesn't exist, or doesn't matter at least. For Shakespeare, it is the human element that matters. Now, when we talked about Aeschylus and Euripides, I told you that the definitive cultural aspect of the Athenian democracy were the great Greek tragedies. What do you suppose is the definitive cultural statement of our own age? Not tragedy. I would say the situation comedy, wouldn't you? I would say it's something like Seinfeld is our definitive cultural statement. But for the Elizabethan age, it was the plays of Shakespeare, the comedies, The historical plays in which England saw itself portrayed as a nation with a destiny to be free, and the tragedies. And it is the Othello that concerns us now. Produced in 1604, it is typical of Shakespeare's ability to take a story that had appeared in Italian literature, in this case, in a very hackneyed form, and turn it into a masterpiece. Othello, the Moor of Venice. It is set in that mysterious city on the Adriatic, Venice, at a time, Shakespeare's own day, when Venice was a great power, when Venice was one of the dominant forces in the Middle East, when Venice ruled an empire that included ports in Asia Minor and Turkey, when it controlled areas of Greece, when it controlled islands like Cyprus, when it controlled an empire in the northern part of Italy. A seagoing republic ruled over by a narrow oligarchy of senators, electing their leader, the Doge, with a professional army and a powerful fleet. Venice, its beauty still rises out of the mist of the Adriatic, testifying to its wealth, to its churches built in honor of God, testifying to the wealth of its nobility, their magnificent palaces along the Grand Canal. And a city in which nothing ever was what it seemed. It is a city of Carnivale, where women wear masks at Mardi Gras, and nothing is quite what it seems. So in this mysterious world of Venice, Shakespeare set his play of intrigue, jealousy, ambition, and love. Those are the great themes of the Othello, not God, not religion, not the immortality of the soul, but the everyday world of jealousy and intrigue and love and ambition. The central figure, Othello, is an outsider in the society of Venice. He is a Moor. He has grown up in North Africa, made his way as a professional soldier, converted to Christianity, and made such a reputation for himself that he has become indispensable to Venice. He is a general who leads their armies to victory. And now he hopes to become totally absorbed into this society of Venice that he so admires and wants to be a part of. And he loves the beautiful Desdemona. Fair-haired, glorious, the wife of a famous senator. She is all he could hope for, what we might call today a trophy wife. But he loves her. He loves her. The play begins not with Othello, but with the motivating character of Iago. Iago, he's someone we meet every day. He's the manipulator, the spin master, the petty little man who spends all of his time intriguing, and a more noble figure like Othello simply cannot grasp how evil he is, or how much trouble can be caused. And in the opening scene, Iago is talking with Rodrigo, another Venetian. And Iago is confessing to Rodrigo his hatred for Othello, whom he serves. He is an officer under Othello. And he is saying, I should have been made second in command for this great expedition that is being launched against Cyprus. I had superb letters of recommendation. I have shown my bravery on the field of battle. Othello himself has written commendations for me. And yet, when it came down to make his choice, he chose Cassio. Who in the world is Michael Cassio? He is a statistician. He is a number cruncher. Why was this bureaucrat made second in command instead of me? I tell you, I hate Othello, and I am going to get rid of him. I am going to get even with him. Rodrigo says, look, if you hate him, just, you know, stop serving under him. Oh, no, that's not the way to do it. I'm going to make him pay for what he did to me. Don't you know that the world is filled with people who are serving under someone who have a boss that they hate, and they curry favor with them, and they flatter them, and they just wait for their moment to strike? Ponder that if you're in a position of leadership. And I'm going to get even with Othello. But you, Cassio, You look so downcast these days. Oh, I am so much in love with Desdemona. Desdemona, yes. Oh, I just think about her day and night. Ah, it's too bad she's going to marry, they tell me, Othello. Yes, and I don't understand why she wants to marry this Moor instead of me. Why, he's not even handsome like me. I know, but he's in a position of power. He's got a reputation for bravery. Women, particularly younger women like Desdemona, are attracted to that. I know, but if I could only make her my own. You know, I like you so much, Rodrigo. I'd like you to have your heart's desire. If there's anything I can do to help you win Desdemona, you know that I, Iago, will do it. You're a real friend, yes. I am your friend, and we have a mutual bond, don't we? I can feel it. We do. I've got a little bit of an idea. You know, I bet you her father, the senator, doesn't know that she's in love with Othello. I bet she hasn't told him. Why don't we set him straight on that matter? And I bet he'll intervene, put a stop to this romance between Othello and Desdemona, and then she'll be yours. She can't help but fall in love with someone as good-looking as you. So let's go down the street and shout up, "Hey, father of Desdemona, do you know where your daughter is at this moment? What is going on out here? What are you shouting about? Are you a bunch of thieves? No, 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 we've come to do you a good turn. No honest man is abroad at this time of night. We're here to do you a good turn, Senator. And we want to ask you, do you know where your daughter is this time of the night? Well, she's in a room. Check. Go see where my daughter is. She's not there. My daughter's not there. No, no, no. She is, in fact, in bed with Othello." With Othello? The general? Yes, that's what she is right now. Oh, I can't stand it. Thank you so much for taking care of this business for me and telling me about it. I'm going to go find my... No, better yet, I am going to go to the Senate House right now, demand a meeting, and demand that Othello be brought up on charges for seducing a young girl. So off he goes to the Senate House. And as chance would have it, the Senate is meeting at this very time of night. For they are faced with a grave crisis. A Turkish fleet, the fleet of the Ottoman Sultan, is on its way to capture the crucial strategic island of Cyprus. And Venice, knowing that this island is essential to its trade as well as its defense, must defend it. And who are they going to send with a fleet but their best general, Othello? So they are meeting to give a command to Othello when the father of Desdemona bursts in and says, "I must have a meeting with you right now. I want to talk about Othello." "Well, we want to talk about Othello, too. Do you agree with our decision to make him commander of the fleet?" "No, I want him sent to prison." "Why do you want him sent to prison?" "He has seduced my daughter." "Othello, you there. Have you seduced his daughter?" "Not really. I love her. We are marrying. Here she is, Desdemona." "Daddy, I love this man." "Daughter, how can you love him? He's older than you. He's not a Venetian." "I don't care. I love him, Daddy." "Well, then, if that's your decision, dear, I won't stand in your way. But I tell you," he whispers to Othello, "she deceived her own daddy. Watch out for her. She might deceive you, too." Now, is that the way a father should behave? No, but that little bit of jealousy, don't you see that he feels that his own daughter is now marrying? He just can't stand it. No matter who it was, it wouldn't be right. But to marry Othello, that's even worse. So that just that little bit of poison that has been dropped. "Othello, do you accept the command?" "Yes, I do." It is all he has wanted, to be a commander of the Venetian navy, lead a military force against the Ottomans, and now to have married the beautiful Desdemona. Isn't that just the peak of ambition? And that's what life is about, isn't it? Collecting trophies, honors, high salary. "I would like to take Desdemona with me, or at least have her join me on the island of Cyprus." "That is for you to decide," the Senate says. "But you must be away right now, within the hour. There's no time to waste. Then you must join me, dear, as soon as you can." And the first act comes to an end. The first scene comes to an end. The first part of this grand drama begins to close. And we shift our eyes now to Cyprus. And there is Iago. Because even though he is not second in command, Othello has kept him on, not understanding how deeply envious and hate-filled is Iago. That's another mistake that people in positions of leadership make. In fact, it's a flaw in the character of the powerful. They think that they can wrong you, but keep you around, and you're not going to do anything to get back at them. Anyway, they're too powerful for you to harm. And Iago is a useful officer. So he is there on the island of Cyprus, spreading his poison. And with him still the faithful Rodrigo. He has given Rodrigo the advice, do not let this get you down. Make money. Make money, make money, make money, and wait for your time. I will help you, and you will get Desdemona. But in the meantime, simply think about making money, making money, making money. And there is a faithful Rodrigo with him on Cyprus. And their plot begins to deepen. Now, the one way, it seems to me, for you to gain the beautiful Desdemona is for Othello to become jealous. We have got to begin to work upon his emotions, don't you see? And that fellow, Cassio, the one who robbed me of my position, he's the perfect foil for us. Are you following me, Rodrigo? He's good looking and young. And if we can just plant the seed in the mind of Othello that Desdemona really loves Cassio and that she's being unfaithful to him, then it will all work out for you. Let me ponder this. And so our arch plotter, Iago, this petty little man, ponders and thinks, and manipulating everyone, he brings Cassio in. You know, Cassio, I so admire you. You're not a little bit jealous that I got the second in command? Absolutely not. You're the person who was fitted for it. I mean, Othello is a brave field commander, and he needs somebody who can be a good, you know, administrator. Well, thank you. That's quite all right. In fact, to show you how much I admire you and want to get to know you better, why don't we have a few drinks together tonight? Othello has just arrived, and you've got the evening free. You know something, Iago? I'm one of those people who can't drink. You know, I have one or two glasses of wine and it goes right to my head. A brave soldier like you can't have one glass of wine. Well, maybe just one. How about one more? Well, just one more. Until finally, of course, he's absolutely beside himself with the wine. And then, why, you know, I tell you one thing, I my head's a little swirling around here, and why are you making so much noise there, says the man at the next table. Why, how dare you talk to me like that? Well, I'm just telling you, you're too loud, and suddenly a fight breaks out, and Cassio wounds him, and the police come up, and then Othello arrives. What's going on? Well, Cassio, you know, got into a brawl here. He has wounded a nobleman, yes, I know he has, and I'll take care of him. There's the governor of Cyprus conferring there with Othello, and then he turns to Iago as Iago is about to lead Cassio off and says, excuse me, let me just ask you in private, Iago, does Cassio drink? Yes, he does, a little bit. What do you mean, a little bit? I mean, he's dead drunk every night when he goes to bed. And this is the man that Othello has chosen to be his second in command? Well, yes, it is. It is indeed. Just a little worry now about Othello. And then Cassio is now in trouble. And Othello tells him, you're going to lose this position as second in command. Cassio now ambitious and worried. How am I going to get back into the good grace of Othello? Who is there to help him but his good friend Iago? You know what I think you ought to do, Cassio, is get Desdemona to appeal to Othello for you. Yes, because he loves her so much that if she says, help Cassio, then he'll do it. Thank you so much. And so Cassio goes to Desdemona. She's beautiful and she's innocent. And being a Venetian filled with good manners, he kisses her hand and asks her, "Will you please intercede with your husband for me?" "I will indeed," says Desdemona. "I want to help you, and I know how much he really likes you and relies upon you. It will be good for both of you. Just let me talk to him." "I thank you so much. Here comes your husband right now. Would you not like to stay?" No, "I think it's better if you intercede for me alone in private." "Well, of course, as you desire." In comes Othello with Iago, and they stop just a distance away from Desdemona. And Othello says, who was that who just kissed my wife's hand?" "Oh, I do believe it's Cassio." "Cassio, yes. Kissed her hand quite a bit, didn't he?" "Well, I guess, yes, he did, come to think of it. Brought her hand up rather close to his lips and kissed it and then looked up at her almost as though their mouths would meet." "Huh. What are you trying to tell me, Iago?" Nothing at all, my lord." "You must be trying to tell me something." No, nothing, my lord." "What is it?" "It's just that..." "No, nothing." "What is it?" "Well, it's just that once, you know, somebody gets a little jealous, bad things happen. And I don't want you to be jealous, my lord, of your beautiful young wife." "Well, do you think Cassio has designs upon my wife?" "Of course he doesn't." No, absolutely not. Did Cassio know your wife before you did?" Well, I think he did." Oh, I just wondered. He's a very young, good-looking man, isn't he?" Yes, he is." So the seed is planted. "But beware, Othello, beware, my lord," Iago warns him. "Beware of the green-eyed monster that is jealousy. Don't let it take hold of you. I'm sure there is nothing wrong. But I will watch the matter for you, my lord, because I think so highly of you." Now the next step. Iago is married, and his wife, Amelia, is a dutiful wife. She wants to please her husband. She is also very close to Desdemona. And Iago goes to her and says, "You know, dear, you could do me a favor." "Yes, you're always with Desdemona. Do you know she has a special little handkerchief?" "Oh, she does. She loves that little handkerchief. Her husband, Othello, gave her that. It was the first present he ever gave her, a lovely little handkerchief that he had picked up in his travels and campaigns. Would you get that for me?" "Of course. She doesn't ask why. Her husband asks her to do something. Nothing wrong with that." And Othello, with Desdemona, cannot get this out of his mind. He keeps worrying about it, and his head is all furrowed, and his wife says, "Darling, do you have a headache?" "Well, I'm just distracted by various troubles. You know, I don't know what's going to become of our expedition. A great storm has come up. It has destroyed the fleet of the Turks, and it doesn't seem as though I'm needed here at all, and I don't know what my next command would be, and I had so looked forward to waging this war against the Turks. And is there anything else on your mind?" No. "Let me tie my handkerchief around you. That will make your headache go away." "No, I don't need it at the moment," and walks away. And the handkerchief drops down, and his wife is distracted and walks away. And Amelia, her friend, the wife of Iago, quickly picks it up. She brings it to her husband. And then he plants it carefully in the room of Cassio. Step by step, the drama begins to unroll. And Othello now cannot get this out of his mind. His wife is betraying him. And every time she comes to him and brings up again this question of Cassio and restoring him to his command, once again Othello wonders, why is she doing this? Why does she keep bringing him up over and over and over again? And Cassio finds the handkerchief. Thinking nothing of it, he gives it to one of his girlfriends, and Iago is walking down the streets of Cyprus with Othello, and he says, "Do you know that strumpet there?" "Yes, Bianca, yes." "You know she's the girlfriend of Cassio, yes?" "Isn't that the handkerchief that you gave your wife as a present?" "It is." "How did you get that handkerchief?" "My boyfriend Cassio gave it." "I don't know, my lord. It seems strange to me that Cassio would have that handkerchief at all. And why would he then give it to a strumpet like that?" Now, Iago must make the action move even faster. And he plots with Rodrigo to kill Cassio. And in the dark of night, Rodrigo strikes down Cassio. and is himself wounded. And then in the dark of night, Rodrigo himself is killed by Iago, so there'll be no witnesses. And in the meantime, Othello, driven mad by his jealousy, goes to his wife. "You are a strumpet. What are you saying? You have betrayed me. I have not. I want you to know that you have betrayed me. Have you prayed tonight?" "No." "Then pray. Pray because I want you to go to your God with a clean soul." "What do you mean, dear? I have not betrayed you." "Do not go to God with a lie upon your lips. I will strangle you." And he does, protesting that she is innocent. She is strangled by her husband and dies. And now the full truth is revealed. The senators come to Othello. "You have killed your wife." "Yes, she betrayed me." "How did she betray you?" Amelia, the wife of Iago, asked. "How did she betray you? She was the purest, most loving wife. She betrayed me with Cassio. Never! What gave you that idea?" "She gave him that handkerchief that meant so much to me." "Oh, God," said Amelia. "She never gave him the handkerchief. I found that handkerchief on the ground. And my husband, Iago, you're the one who wanted it." "Oh, no, I never wanted it." "Oh, my God, what have you done?" And suddenly the wife of Iago realizes the evil that he has caused. And then the senators produce letters written by Rodrigo, placed on his person, so that in case everything went wrong, he would tell the truth. And he carries out an indictment with these letters from the grave of Iago. "You, Iago, you have murdered Rodrigo. And you have caused Othello to murder his wife. The wife is dead. Rodrigo is dead. And Iago is going to now be led off to torture. And Othello, why, you must go back to Venice to answer on charges of murder." "No, I will never go back. But say this of me in the letters in which you relate this unhappy deed, that I loved not wisely but too well. And tell how once in Aleppo a turbaned and malignant Turk traduced the state and beat a Venetian. And I took the circumcised dog by the throat and smote him thus. And so Othello kills himself. The play comes to an end. There is no God working behind these scenes. There is simply human nature that we see every day and real human figures. That is what gives such power to Shakespeare. We all know the Othello, the man chosen for leadership who is never quite sure that he is worthy or accepted of it. Never quite worthy of the power that he has been given, never sure of himself, always a little lacking in confidence. The wife is dutiful and beautiful, but her husband just can't trust his luck that he has her. And Iago, the petty, spiteful little man who can set all of this in motion. And for what? That is what Shakespeare asks you. For what? For being second in command of an expedition that never really came off? To cause all of this suffering out of thwarted ambition? And Othello, could not this entire set of terrible events been prevented if he had just gone to his wife and said, "Are you sleeping with Cassio? Be honest." Mere forthrightness between the two. But we love deception. We love power. We now love to manipulate others and in turn are ourselves manipulated. That is the tragedy in Shakespeare. human nature again and again committing the same mistakes and refusing to learn. In our next lecture, we want to compare this tragic vision of Shakespeare with one of the greatest of the Greek tragedies, also dealing with evil, the Prometheus Bound by Aeschylus.